in Kanchipuram lived Koresh. Just outside of Kanchipuram, there was a town called Kura. And this particular man, he was a very wealthy, aristocratic landowner. He was the proprietor of practically all the land of that area of Kura. And therefore, people called him Kuresh, the Lord of Kura. Kuresh had a big, beautiful house, much wealth, and a beautiful, chaste wife named Andal. One day, actually one night, Lakshmi Devi heard some people say she asked Kanchipurna. Other scriptures say that she asked Vardraj himself. The deity Lakshmi asked, "What was that loud noise?" The answer was, "That is the gate of Kuresh. Please tell me about this. Every night I hear it." He says, "Koresh and his wife Andal are so charitable. They have so much wealth, but they use everything in charity. At sunrise, every day, 365 days a year, at sunrise, they open the gates of their house, and any poor person, any person who is having difficulty can come to their house and they will give charity to them. They will satisfy whatever desires they have according to their capacity. And there is a stream, a line of people coming from sunrise until night, all day. They're just giving charity, 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 giving money, giving clothes, giving medical relief, giving food, giving everything. Whatever a person needs, they're just giving. Every day, all day. And finally, when it's late at night, after the sunset, then they close the gate. Until the next morning when they open their doors to just bestow charity upon everyone." This was the kind nature of Koresh. Lakshmi Devi, she said, "I want to meet this wealthy aristocratic man who is so charitable. I want to meet him." So Kanchipurna spoke to Koresh and said that Lakshmi wants to meet you. "Huh? Why does she want to meet me?" "Because she heard about the great charity you're giving to others." Do you think Koresh was ecstatic? Koresh felt ashamed. He said, "Lakshmi Devi is the goddess of fortune. She's the proprietor of everything. Why does she want to meet me? I'm so sinful, I'm so lowly, I'm so materialistic, I'm so attached to material things. Why would she want to meet me?" "She doesn't want to meet me because I'm a devotee. She wants to meet me because I'm wealthy and I give in charity. This is not the proper way to go before the goddess of fortune. I'm just a show bottle." And then he approached his wife. And he said, "Andal, We should leave this place and never come back. Who am I to stand before Lakshmi in such a contaminated state? I should go to Sri Rangam and take shelter of my Guru Maharaj and learn how to truly purify my heart and give up this show bottle business of being charitable and getting all this nonsense prestige and adoration for giving mundane charity to others. The Lord and the Goddess of Fortune is only concerned with pure devotional service, not mundane charity. I'm simply wasting my life. And my only shelter is my Guru Maharaj. That day, Koresh gave his entire property and all of his wealth to the Brahmins. And only put on the robes of a mendicant. And his wife Andal was 100% supporting him. And they left, walking with bare feet to Sri Rangam. In the morning, they were wealthy landowners. By the afternoon, by their own free will, they were penniless beggars. Nothing. They did not want to be known as being charitable people. They wanted the Lord to appreciate them as pure devotees of their Gurudev. So they were walking long distance through forest. Andal was afraid. She said, there may be thieves and dacoits in this forest. Are you not feeling any fear? And Koresh said, only if you have wealth do you have fear. If you have nothing, you have nothing to lose, and then you're fearless. My dear wife, did you bring anything with you? She said, my dear husband, I brought only one thing, a golden bowl to feed you with. I said, that is why you are feeling fear. So they took that bowl and threw it as far as they could into the jungle, and both became fearless. They came to Sri Rangam from Kanchipuram. And made their residence a very, very simple, humble residence just beside their ashram of their Guru Maharaj, Ramanujacharya. And they lived such a simple way, Koresh and Andal. Koresh would go out and beg Madhukari every day to bring some food home for them to eat. Other than that, they had no possessions whatsoever. One day, it was pouring torrential rain, and there was no possible way that Koresh could go out to collect alms. The whole day passed in this way. And Koresh was very, very hungry. He was laying down in great hunger. And meanwhile, at the Sri Ranganath temple, Andal heard the bells ringing for the bhog offering of Sri Ranganath. She was just thinking in her heart. It wasn't that she was praying. She was just thinking in her heart that, oh, Ranganath, you are eating nice bhoga. Perhaps some of that bhoga could be brought here to feed my husband. He's starving. Ranganath is in the heart of every living being. So the deity arranged for a procession with a palanquin to come right to the little hut of Koresh with the Rajbhog offering. Arivo.
Arivo.
And the priest came and said, "This is for Koresh. Ranganath has sent it." And it was a lot of prasad. It was a big amount of prasad. So Koresh just took a small part of it and said, "You know, please distribute this to the devotees." And then he turned to his wife, Andal. He said, "Did you think in your mind that Ranganath should send this prasad to me? Otherwise, why would a procession come?" And his wife confessed, "Yes, I could not tolerate seeing you starving like this, laying on your stomach with no food. So I just thought it would be so nice if Ranganath's prasad was brought to you." Koresh became very unhappy. He said, "The Lord is not our servant. The Lord is not our order supplier. We are unconditionally the servants of the Lord. We should never, ever, ever ask the Lord to serve us. The only question we should have is, 'My Lord, how can I serve you? My dear wife, I cannot be angry with you because I know that you did this out of your love, but I instruct you this. Never, ever think this way again.'" And she promised she would not. According to the Sri Sampradaya, Koresh ate some of that prasad of Ranganath's remnants and then gave his remnants to his wife. He took a tiny portion and gave her the rest, and she ate it. And from eating that prasad of Ranganath and Lakshmi Devi, she became pregnant. And after some months, twins, two boys were born. When Ramanujacharya heard this, he was very happy. Ramanujacharya considered that these children were directly the children of Lakshmi and Ranganath. And they simply appeared in this world through the womb of Andal, the wife of Koresh. When Ramanujacharya heard this, he was very happy. Ramanujacharya considered that these children were directly the children of Lakshmi and Ranganath. And they simply appeared in this world through the womb of Andal, the wife of Koresh. Govinda, who was then sannyasi, the brother cousin of Ramanujacharya, he went and whispered the proper mantras and performed the purificatory ceremonies according to the birth of the child. And then at the proper time, soon after, the name-giving ceremony, Sripad Ramanujacharya came to the place of Koresh. And he named one of the child Vyas. And to fulfill the third and final promise that he made to Jamunacharya, Ramanujacharya personally named the effulgent child of Koresh, Parasara, who had spoken the Vishnu Purana. Now this Parasara, also known as Parasara Bhatter, incredible stories about him. He was unbelievable devotee. In fact, sometimes Ranganath arranged that he would put these two little babies in a cradle on the altar with him. Yes? And when people would come for darshan of Ranganath, there would be Ranganath, you'll see him tomorrow. Gigantic Murti of Lord Vishnu laying on Ananta Shesha with Lakshmi there. Awesome darshan. But they'd also see right next to Ranganath would be a little swing with two babies on it. And that was Parasara and Vyas. And Ranganath, when they started growing a little older, Ranganath arranged that they would get first bhoga. The first, before it was even prasad for the general public, he would give it to these two little children. They were very gifted. They were the children of the great Koresh. One day, a Digvijay Pandit, whose name was Sarvagya Bhatt, he came to Sri Rangam. But he did not come in a very common way. He came riding on a palanquin. And there were musicians playing horns and drums, and there were Brahmins chanting mantras, and everyone was glorifying him. Everyone was glorifying him. That Sarvagya Bhatter knows everything. He knows everything about everything. He's such a scholar. So as the procession was passing, little Parasara, he was only 5 years old at the time, or less, five-year-old child. He just ran up to the palanquin of Sarvagya Bhatter. Just ran up to the palanquin. With a handful of dirt. Yes? And he just pushed this dirt that was just a pile of just sand. It was not dirt, it was sand. Just pushed this handful of sand right in front of Sarvagya's face and said, if you know everything, if your name is really Sarvagya, the knower of everything, he actually had a high voice. I'll try to do it. If you know everything, and your name is really Sarvagya, then you must be able to tell me how many grains of sand are in my hand. But he said it with such conviction. Sarvagya thought about it very deeply and looked at the child. Just looked down at this child. And the little child was saying, how can you call yourself Sarvagya if you cannot even tell me how many grains of sand are in my hand? Sarvagya came off his palanquin, embraced the boy, and said, you have defeated me. He said, I give up my false pride, I give up my entourage of palanquins and elephants and musicians and Brahmins, and I will just become a humble servant. And Parasara, who was only 5 years old, he said, I accept you as my guru. Shall I continue? In Sri Rangam, on one day there was a glorious festival. They were taking the Vijayamurti of Ranganath on a procession through the town. What an incredible procession. There were flags and festoons and vimanas, and there was Brahmins chanting mantras, and there was droom, 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 those big South Indian drums playing, and they were playing their horns, playing conch shells, and like that. And there were ladies dancing and ladies singing, and it was just one thing after another of incredible entertainment. And all the people of Sri Rangam were just enthralled looking at the exciting offerings. And then at the end of this elaborate procession was the palanquin of Ranganath, which was decorated with jewels and with flowers. Everyone was just crowding to see the darshan of the Lord. Everyone was anticipating with such deep eagerness to see the darshan of the Lord. The streets were just lined with people whose eyes were fixed on the beauty of the Lord and the elegant arrangements. Except for one man. He was a very handsome person, very large in size with broad shoulders. But he was completely oblivious to the entire festival. Would you like to know why? People were bumping into him, people were crashing into him, going to see the deity, and he was just standing completely oblivious. He was holding an umbrella, shading the sun from a beautiful woman. This lady had a beautiful form and lovely eyes. And this man was standing. His left hand held an umbrella over her, and his right hand was fanning her to keep her cool. And his eyes were gazing without moving an inch from her beauty. Now there's tens and thousands of people in the street to see Lord Ranganath. And people see him just gazing at this woman, fanning her and shading her. People were making fun of him. People were criticizing him. People were laughing at him, ridiculing him. What a nonsense, horrible display of mundane attraction right in the middle of the annual festival of Lord Ranganath. But he didn't even notice that anyone was thinking. He was absorbed. So Ramanujacharya and his disciples were just returning to their ashram. When Ramanujacharya happened to see this, he was amazed. He was simply amazed at this person. Fanning, shading, and staring at this woman in front of thousands of people while the deity's right next to him. Yatiraj told Dasarathi, "Go to that man and tell him that I would like to meet with him." So Dasarathi went through the crowds and he got to this man. And he said, he gave the message. But this personality was so absorbed and so totally, all of his senses were immersed in this beauty of this woman. He couldn't even hear Dasarathi. Dasarathi, just again and again and again, louder and louder, Ramanujacharya wants to see you. And he's just... Dear sir, Ramanujacharya, the great Acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, wants to see you. And he's just... Sir, Ramanujacharya wants to see you. And finally, he heard him. And it was like he just woke up from sleep. He went, just from a trance. And he looked at him and great, very annoyed. Like, who is disturbing my samadhi? It was like that. And he turned, who is disturbing me? And he somehow or other dragged his eyes away from this woman to see. And he saw this great sadhu, Dasarathi, standing there. And he said, dear sir, how can I serve you? Why have you come? And Dasarathi said, the great Acharya, Ramanuja, he's standing right there and he wants to meet with you. So the man turned to the lady and said, I will be right back. A great saint wants to see me. I cannot refuse. I'll be right back. So he went. And he offered his respects to the great Yatiraj. Ramanujacharya said, please tell me who you are. He said, my name is Danur Das. And I am from a village some distance away. And my profession is that I'm a wrestler for the king of that village. Ramanujacharya said, do you not understand that you're making a complete fool out of yourself in public? The deity's there and you're not even looking. Right in front of thousands of people, you're gazing at this woman. People are laughing at you. People are ridiculing you. You're making yourself look like a complete fool. Tell me why. Danur Das replied that I have seen many, many things in this world, but I have never, ever seen anything so enchantingly beautiful as the lotus eyes of this woman. And therefore, my mind, my heart, and my eyes cannot give up for a moment the beauty of her lotus eyes. Ramanujacharya said, is she your wife? He said, no, she is not my wife. Her name is Hemangi. She's a courtesan. But it doesn't matter that she's not my wife, because I love her, and I love her only, and there is no one ever in my life that I will ever love except her. Ramanujacharya, he said, Danur Das, if I can show you something more beautiful, if I can show you eyes more beautiful than this woman's, then will you renounce her and accept that other person? And Danur Das said, There is no one with more beautiful eyes than this woman, Hemangi. However, if you can show me anything more beautiful, then I will accept it. Sripad Ramanujacharya said, "Ah, then tonight you come to my ashram." He said, "Yes, now you can go." So Dhanurdas, after offering his obeisances, immediately ran back to that beautiful woman and raised the umbrella with one hand and fanned her and gazed at her beautiful eyes for the rest of the day. That evening he came to the ashram of Sripad Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya said, "Now I will show you the essence of all beauty. A spiritual beauty that will attract your heart away from all the mundane, temporary beauties of this world. Come with me." He brought him into the temple of Sri Ranganath. Together they walked through all the seven gates and entered into the deity's room. It was just the time for evening aarti. And Ramanujacharya prayed. He prayed from his heart to Sri Ranganath to attract the heart of this very, very fallen, lusty man. The pujari took the fire and started at Ranganath's feet, then to his ankles. And Dhanurdas was watching. Ramanujacharya said, "Watch as he's offering the flame to the Lord." And it rose to his knees and to his waist, to his arms and chest. The pujari then circumambulated with the flame of camphor the beautiful golden eyes of Sri Ranganath. Upon seeing the lotus eyes of the Lord, Dhanurdas was weeping tears of ecstasy. His limbs were trembling. He could not speak a word. He was utterly stunned in spiritual bliss. After the aarti was finished, Dhanurdas fell at the lotus feet of Ramanujacharya, clung to his feet with his hands, and wept tears of gratitude. He said, "Today you have saved me from the vile pit of materialistic attractions. Today you have transformed my heart from material lust to spiritual love. Now that I see the beautiful golden eyes of Sri Ranganath, I have no more attraction for Hemangi or anyone else in this world. I accept you as my spiritual master. It is only by your grace that you have given me this divine vision. I surrender to you." Ramanujacharya then brought Dhanurdas back to the ashram. Meanwhile, this courtesan, which is something like a prostitute, she actually had a very pious heart, but that just happened to be her profession. She heard about the transformation of Dhanurdas. And she considered, even though they weren't married, she considered him like her husband because he was so addicted to her. by the prayers of Ramanujacharya, even her heart changed. And she came to Ramanujacharya and surrendered her life and accepted him as her guru. Sripad Ramanujacharya then instructed them to get married and live a proper household life, and said you should not be attached to any sense gratification together. You should simply be attached to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and service to the Vaishnavas. They lived together in the most exemplary possible way, always immersed in devotional service, unconditionally, with nothing expected for themselves. But the king, who he was a wrestler for, when he told the king that he was going to surrender to Ramanujacharya, the king gave all blessings. He said, you could leave our village, you could live in Sri Rangam for the rest of your life. In fact, I will supply all your needs for you. So they shifted to Sri Rangam, and the king was supplying adequate wealth for them to live by. So they had some opulence, but they lived very simple with it. Dhanardas was so humble. He had such an eager desire to serve. Even though he was from a low class, he was not a Brahmin. He was not a scholar. He was a wrestler. But he had such a nice service attitude that Ramanujacharya gave him very, very intimate affection. In fact, every day when Ramanujacharya would go to the Kaveri River to take his bath, on the way, Ramanujacharya, who was getting old at the time, would hold on to Dasarathi's shoulder. But after the bath, coming back, he would hold the hand of Dhanardas. And some of the Brahmin disciples of Ramanujacharya, they were very much becoming disturbed. Some of them were brahmacharis. And these Brahmins actually started criticizing, indirectly, Ramanujacharya. Why is he giving such immense attention and affection to this person who's like a Shudra? He's not learned. He's not a Brahmin. We're sitting here all day studying his teachings, studying his scriptures, learning the verses. We're sitting all day at his lotus feet rendering so many services. We've given our life for him. We're Brahmins. And yet he's giving so much more attention to this wrestler, to the Sudra man. Why? Not only that, he's a householder. He's attached to a beautiful wife. And he gives her beautiful ornaments. We're renounced. We're Brahmins. We don't have anything. And he's living in a nice house with a woman, a beautiful woman. Why is Ramanujacharya giving so much attention, so much affection, and so much service to him? Is our Guru Maharaj being influenced by Maya? This was their thought. Ramanujacharya understood their thinking. So he made a plan. One night when all these austere scholarly Brahmins were sleeping, Ramanujacharya got up and he went to the clotheslines where their dhotis were being dried, and he ripped pieces off each dhoti. Ramanujacharya personally ripped the dhotis. And early in the morning when they all woke up, seeing their dhotis ripped, they all started accusing each other of ripping each other's dhotis and being envious and everything else. And there was a big chaos of everyone arguing with each other and accusing each other. People were very, very, very disturbed. So Ramanujacharya personally had to come and pacify them. That evening, Dhanardas would come every evening to sit and hear from Ramanujacharya and render services to him. So Shripad Ramanujacharya called his Brahmin, austere, scholarly students. He said, "You know, this Dhanardas, he's too much attached to his wife. And he's too much attached to his wealth in his grihastha life. And I think that we should see him for what he really is." And oh, the Brahmins were so enlivened. Oh, they were so happy to hear this from Gurudev. They said, "Yes, yes, that's a fact, Gurudev. That's a fact. He's too much attached. Beautiful wife and ornaments and house and all of these things." So Ramanujacharya said, "I'm going to keep Dhanardas here late. When his wife is sleeping, you should very quietly go through the window of their house and steal the precious ornaments that she's wearing on her body and bring them back. And then I'll send you again to watch Dhanardas's reaction and her reaction when they see the jewels are stolen." This was a very good plan. She lay down to sleep. The Brahmins crawled through the window, very gently started taking the precious jewels from her face. They took everything off, her earrings, her nose ring, whatever else was there. And she wasn't asleep. She was actually pretending to sleep. And after they took everything off one side of her face, she wanted to turn over so that they could take everything off the other side of her face. So very, very slowly, she just kind of pretending to be sleeping, she started to turn her face. But when they saw her turn, they became afraid and jumped out the window. And they came back to Ramanujacharya's ashram. "You have done your mission?" They said, "Yes." So then he told Dhanardas, "Now you can go home." And then Ramanujacharya said, "Follow behind and see his reaction." So he went in the house, and the Brahmins were secretly looking through the window. "Are you all still awake?" Dhanardas looked at his wife, said, "What is this? Half your face has jewels and half your face has nothing." She said, "What happened is some of the Brahmin disciples of Gurudev, they came in at night when I was laying down and they started taking the jewels off my face. I was awake, but I was thinking that, you know, the ashram must be in need of money for them to be doing something like this. So I didn't want to disturb them. I wanted them to take all the jewels, so I pretended to sleep. And after they took everything from one half off, I tried to slowly turn so that they can take everything off the other side to use in Gurudev's service. But unfortunately, when I moved, they became afraid and ran away. And Dhanar Das was very upset. He said, nothing that we have is our own. Everything is the property of our Guru Maharaj. Why are you so foolish that you moved in such a way that you scared them away? How unfortunate we are. How unfortunate we are that we were not given the good fortune of giving everything to these Brahmins. We were only allowed to give half. When the Brahmins heard this, they were struck with wonder. They came back and told Ramanujacharya the whole story. Ramanujacharya said, all right, now you go to sleep. The next day they were having the regular class. And after reciting shlokas from the holy scriptures, Ramanujacharya gave a commentary. He said, do you remember last night? The night before, actually, when there were tears in your dhotis, how you were all so attached to your dhotis that you were fighting with one another over your dhoti attachment? And do you remember last night how you stole the ornaments of Dhanar Das? And he was completely peaceful, and he and his wife both, they wanted to give everything they have unconditionally. So tell me, who is more detached? You, Brahmacharis, or Dhanar Das? Tell me, who is more living by the symptoms of a Brahman, you or Dhanar Das and his wife? And they all hung their heads low and spoke to their Guru Maharaj, yes, Dhanar Das is the real Brahman, not us. Ramanujacharya said, Brahman is not by birth. Brahman is not by simply the cultivation of knowledge. A real Brahman must be understood by their qualities of truthfulness, renunciation, simplicity, honesty, and devotion to the Lord. One day, Ramanujacharya heard that there was quite a stir of controversy in Sri Rangam. Mahapurna, who was one of his gurus and a great Brahmin by birth, he had performed the last rites for a Shudra. People were condemning him for doing this. The word was circulating in so many directions. In fact, some of the Brahmins of the Ranganath temple, they put like a thorn fence around Mahapurna's house, considering him to be condemned for performing the last rites of a dead Shudra. So Ramanujacharya was wondering, why did he do this? Why did he create such a chaotic stir of confusion by doing like this? So Sripad Ramanujacharya went to the house of Mahapurna, and you can't even believe what he found. That practically all the relatives and family members of Mahapurna rejected him and left his house and would have nothing to do with him. They considered that he had degraded their caste. The only person that remained faithful in the whole family was his daughter, Atulai, who came from her husband's house to render service to her elderly father. All other family members rejected him. So Ramanujacharya asked, why did you do this? It is not the social function of a Brahmin to perform the last rites for a Shudra. Mahapurna was totally peaceful, totally blissful. And he replied to Ramanujacharya. He said, yes, according to the Manusmriti, a Brahmin is not supposed to perform the last rites of a Shudra. But there is something higher than the laws of Manusmriti. And that is the sacred verse, Mahajano Yena Gatasa Panta, that one should follow in the footsteps of the great souls. I want to share you this. Lord Sri Ramchandra performed the last rites for Jatayu, who was a bird. And amongst birds, he was like a vulture. Why? Because Jatayu was a great devotee. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he honored and worshipped Vidura, who came from a Sudra family. Why? Because he was a great devotee. Let me tell you about this Sudra. Years ago, my beloved Guru Maharaj, Yamunacharya, he had a severe disease, something like cancer. And this Sudra, he massaged my Guru Maharaj with so much devotion and put so much emotion into his service and prayed so much to the Lord to give him the illness of my Guru that cancerous disease left Yamunacharya and entered into the body of the Shudra. That was the nature of his devotion. And when doctors came to try to cure him, he refused to take any treatment because he considered this cancer to be the Mahaprasad of Yamunacharya. And he felt so totally blessed and fortunate to have the cancer of Yamunacharya. Years have passed, and he died. He's a great devotee. A great devotee is beyond Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Mahapurna said, with eyes full of tears, he said, Ramanujacharya, I feel most fortunate and blessed to have performed the last rites for this great devotee. And I do not care what anyone else may think. Ramanujacharya fell at the feet of Mahapurna with tears in his eyes and congratulated him for his transcendental good qualities. Are you still awake?
Yeah.
Now we will begin today's lecture. Thousands of people were taking to the pure path of bhakti. But at that time in Kanchipuram, a king of the name Kolatunga I took the rule of this entire region. Kolatunga was a staunch, fanatical devotee of Lord Shiva. I'm going to tell this story here because this evening we're going to Shivakanchi, and it would be more appropriate to speak this story here. And to be honest with you, it will be much safer for all of us that I tell this story. When Lord Nityananda Prabhu came to Shivakanchi and Vishnukanchi, he saw that the Shivites and the Vaishnavas were always fighting with each other from two sides of the same town. And he simply laughed at their small-mindedness. So Kolatunga, he was based in Shivakanchi. And he worshipped the Supreme Lord who abides there as Ekambeshwar. And it was his proclamation that Ekambeshwar, the deity of Shivakanchi, be the supreme worshipable Lord for his entire kingdom. And he hated anyone who did not worship Lord Shiva. He considered them like heretics, destroyers of Vedic culture. So he proclaimed a law that everyone must surrender to Shiva as the one and only God. Now he had one minister whose name was Chatugram. Chatugram previously was a disciple of Kuresh. Very learned. But due to some jealousy in his heart, he rejected his guru. He rejected his param guru, Ramanujacharya. And he became a Shivite. And he became a very, very close follower of Kolatunga I. Now, meanwhile, Kolatunga, his object in life was to convert everyone to Shaivism. Chatugram informed the king that there is a great, powerful Vaishnav of the name Ramanuja. As long as he is living, he is going to keep millions of people worshippers of Vishnu. There are only two ways that you can make your kingdom a kingdom of Shivites. One is you must defeat and convert Ramanujacharya, or two, you must kill him. There's no other way. He's too powerful. He's too influential. Kolatunga took these words very seriously from Chatugram. Chatugram hated Kuresh and hated Ramanujacharya. So Kolatunga sent some military personnel to go to Sri Rangam with the order that he wanted to meet Ramanujacharya and his guru Mahapurna. And they must come at once with the soldiers to Kanchipuram. So the royal military procession went to Sri Rangam and they made their proclamation. Meanwhile, Ramanujacharya was taking his bath. And the news came to Quraysh. Ramanujacharya, there are different versions of the story, but I will tell as I understand. Sripad Ramanujacharya, when he heard that he was being invited by the king, he started making arrangements to go. But Quraysh was very, very intelligent. He understood exactly what was happening. They were inviting Ramanujacharya to kill him. So Quraysh, with tears in his eyes, fell at the feet of Sripad Ramanujacharya and said, "Gurudev, please do not go. This king is cruel. He hates you. He hates Vaishnavas. If you die, Guru Maharaj, then the sun of the light of the whole world will be extinguished. You are the hope, the glory, the life and soul of all of your disciples. You are the hope of millions of people throughout the land. But I am insignificant. I am nothing. If I die, there will be no loss to the world. In fact, I will consider it the greatest honor of my life to die on your behalf. Dear Guru Maharaj, please, they don't know what you look like. Let me go in your place, I beg you." He cried, he fell at his feet, and the other disciples all agreed with Quraysh. So Ramanujacharya gave Quraysh his saffron sannyasi garments. Quraysh gave Ramanujacharya his white grihasta garments. Ramanujacharya, putting on white and looking just like a householder, left through a back door into the forest. Gradually, Dasarathi, Govinda, Dhanardas, they all left through back doors to meet. Mahapurna, he said, "I'm very old. I cannot go into exile and try to escape with the rest of you into the forest." He said, "Let me go to see the king. And if it means giving up my body, it's the time of my life to go back to Vaikuntha anyway." So Quraysh came out with the saffron garments and the danda of Ramanujacharya along with Mahapurna. They were brought to Shivakanshi. Presented in the royal court before the King Kolatunga. Kolatunga got up to receive them with great respect, as did all the Brahmin pundits. They offered Quraysh and Mahapurna respectable seats. The king said, "Oh, Ramanujacharya, I have heard many great things about your scholarship and your deep learning. I want to ask some questions to you. That is why I called you here. We all require your enlightenment. Please tell us, what is the supreme goal of life and what is our duty to perform? Excuse me. Quraysh, very boldly responded. He said, Vishnu, Lord Narayan, is the supreme personality of Godhead, the God who is presiding over all other gods. And the supreme goal of life, the duty of everyone, King, is to surrender to Vishnu and worship him alone with love and devotion. How many of you would have said that to the king? King Kolatunga just blew up with anger. Flames were practically coming out of his eyes. He was screaming insults. He got up from his throne and yelled, Heretic! What are you saying? Ignorant fool! You deserve to die for speaking such nonsense. Lord Shiva is supreme. Lord Shiva is the creator, the maintainer, and the destroyer of everything in this world. Surrender to Shiva or you will not see the sunrise tomorrow. If you make this bogus claim that Vishnu is supreme, then you speak to my pundits and surrender to them. Then Kolatunga very confidently sat on his throne as his Brahmin pundits lodged argument after argument. And Quraysh, Mahapurna, very calmly defeated every argument they presented. According to Shastra, according to tradition, according to logic, from every point of view, they prove that Vishnu is supreme. Kolatunga and the Brahmins could not accept it. They were absolutely outraged. Kolatunga just screamed out, Enough with all of your speculative word jugglery. Surrender or die. Sign this paper, Ramanujacharya and Mahapurna. And written on the paper was, Shiva is the greatest. Shiva is supreme. Sign this. Quraysh took his pen, the royal pen, and signed. Kolatunga and all the Brahmins were feeling very happy they were signing. Until they saw what he signed. Instead of saying Ramanujacharya Mahapurna, they read, it said, Shiva is supreme. But Quraysh wrote, But even Drona is greater than Shiva. Because according to weights, there's two weights that you use as a scale for weighing grains. One is a Shiva and one is a Drona. And Drona weighs heavier than a Shiva. So he said even Drona is greater than Shiva. When Kolatunga read that, it was beyond his control. He said, take them out. Take them out. Torture them and pluck out their eyes. He said, Ramanuja, I would kill you. But years ago, you delivered my sister from a ghost. So it is not proper etiquette for me to kill you. but let your eyes be plucked out and die slowly and painfully. Get them out of here. So the guards brought Mahapurna and Quraysh outside, and in various ways they tortured their bodies. And at the culmination of the torture, they plucked out the eyeballs of Quraysh and Mahapurna. Now, some people say when they were just about to pluck out the eyes of Quraysh, he took his own eyes out. Two different versions. But in either case, plucking out their eyes, which is such a painful experience, blood was just covering their entire bodies, gushing out of their face. And the guards threw them on the ground to die. But Quraysh, to their great amazement, he got up. He couldn't see anything. He had no eyes. But with folded palms, he said to the guards, he said, I pray to Lord Narayan that he forgives you for whatever offense that you have made. I want to thank all of you from the deepest gratitude of my heart. Thank you, dear guards, because you have given me such a wonderful service to my Guru Maharaj. I pray to Lord Narayan that he delivers you from all sins and elevates you to Vaikuntha, because you have allowed me to perform the most extraordinary service of giving my eyes and my life for my spiritual master. And then Quraysh offered his obeisances to the guards. Seeing his sincerity, these wicked-hearted guards, their hearts were transformed. They were transformed. Meanwhile, Mahapurna's daughter, Atulai, was secretly watching the whole experience. And then when they were left alone to die in the forest, blind, Atulai helped them to move forward. In fact, even the guards gave some simple forest people some donation to help them to go back to Sri Rangam. As they were traveling back to Sri Rangam through the forest, Mahapurna laid in the forest pathway and he told Quraysh, I cannot go any further. He said, I am very old, and the intensity of this pain is not tolerable to this aged body of mine. I can hear that Lord Narayan is calling me now back to Vaikuntha. Let me die here.